And he took bread and gave thanks and brake it and gave unto them, saying, this is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. Luke 22:19. When I typed communion into the Google search bar and pressed the return key, the first result defined communion as, quote, the sharing or exchanging of intimate thoughts and feelings, especially when the exchange is on a mental or spiritual level. Over the last 2.5 years, Jamie and I's friendship has been built on a foundation of communion. Whether sitting across a table from him and consuming stacks of salt and pepper onion rings at Ted's Montana Grill, or blue ribbon burgers at Red Robin, or Diavola, is that the right? All right, Diavola, okay. I meant to check that. Or Diavola pizzas at Isabella's. Our mandates are not only occasions to share a meal, but our minds, hearts, and spirits as well. Jamie, thank you for blessing me and Allison for your presence in our lives. Jack Gilbert, when asked by Sarah Fay for the Paris Review, what other than yourself is the subject of your poems? He replied, those I love, being, living my life without being diverted into things that people so often get diverted into. In the poem, Finding Something, Gilbert tells us, I sit on the terrace of this worn via, the king's telegrapher built on the mountain that looks down on a blue sea and the small white ferry that crosses slowly to the next island each noon. Like Gilbert, Jamie writes from a place of awe. Whether his subject is a threesome involving sea monsters, a love poem not for but against the body, or a husband lost in the wild, his work is born from a place of enchantment, with love, with life. Jamie has received scholarships to the Breadloaf Writers Conference and the Swanee Writers Conference, and has received fellowships to the Kenyon Review Writers Workshop and the Lambda Literary Writers Retreat. His poems have recently appeared or are forthcoming in Poetry, Jubilat, Gulf Coast, The Journal, The Adroit Journal, Sixth Finch, and Poets.org. Please join me in welcoming Jamie to the stage.
Hello. Thank you, Zach, for that beautiful introduction. And thank you, Laurel, for sharing the stage with me. Your fucking story was so beautiful. It's like sitting here trying not to get emotional. Okay, I have 8 poems tonight. And the first one is called Threesome with Sea Monsters and Theft. Starfish between them fatten on tube worms trapped in the tide pool rock gardens. Dressed like a schoolboy, the one mopes up to Devil's Churn. The other follows. Of course, the other follows. The sea, sawing, caught in the churn's throat, throws a voice back. So the one yells into it. The other moves shoreward, where underfoot razor clams locked against him fracture and crumb. Anywhere he steps, he is breaking some. Fagged crows preen, gobbling fleas. Opened crabs' hands bring down gulls. The one's hands are rough as silt. He signals we sit. He touches the other's jaw with his blue fingers. Each believes he is a net, trapped in another net's arms. A strand of the one's unwashed hair sticks in a hinge of the other's spectacles. I loosen it. Sea monster on sea monster drowning. Rock pools break the sea that thieves wrecked shells away as sediment. All of us are soon gone. The waves go out and out. I am just another thing that loves them. Thank you. This is called My Husband Lost in the Wild. He said he buried his right eye in South Georgia on a dare, he said, when he was little, beneath one green ash of two that marked the end of a road whose name he's by now forgotten, lonesome something, maybe dog or cricket. He said he couldn't love me, not really, not without his old right eye. And anyway, he'd left his tongue as a tip slid under a mug at a small North Florida diner, would collect it too along the way, seeing as he'd asked the server to save it, and she had kindly agreed. Three of his ribs were further gone, one in Wisconsin, where he'd planted it like a tree, though he believed even then nothing would bloom on it. Another he pawned in Manitoba for a silver bracelet, which he wore only when he was very sad. And his last rib he'd been keeping in a safety deposit box in a credit union on the alien Oregon coast, where he'd visit sometimes, stopping off in Advantages to take in expanses of pines covered in moss and something else like brine. And the pines were tall, tall and uncommunicating, as if they had been designed only to listen. His ears he'd left with me. I told them everything. Words I had invented for the color of new moons, city names I had given to four slender ant colonies that had since emerged on the lawn. I told the ears, come back to me, but they were unable to relay these types of things. And anyway, there was nothing else to do. I took all my littlest veins and pitched them as a woven tightrope out of the kitchen window and hooked with a makeshift grapple the cheek of the visible moon, which carried me away, and I was sorry to have wounded it like that, and I was sorry to be carried by what I had wounded. Thank you. This poem is called Six Valedictions from the Last Night I Loved You. Valedictions being a kind of ceremonial goodbye, but here I want to use them as the end of a letter. So you have the salutation, dear so-and-so, and then letter, 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 and then sincerely so-and-so, someone who's different. And so I suppose for each of the sections, you can just imagine like Jamie at the end. I suppose that's the intention. So six valedictions from the last night I loved you. One, for the band of panic street cats lapping spoiled soup I discarded at the base of what I only knew to call a Mexican rose. And for you, of course, dawdling on the lawn, bent over a Walmart telescope in search of stars that are remotest, Deneb, Orion's swollen foot, the cities of Andromeda, the vaporous shimmering that was the first star of Ophiuchus, which even by then was gone. Two, as if I were looking only to neglect that we were all we had as we neglected those furry gray fungus gnats overrunning the bathroom, little sadnesses switching on and off on the illuminated mirror. Three. Remembering the gnats bred in the red pot of succulents, they seem drawn to it, its color, and that I'd scoured unswept corners behind our refrigerator for a thin, nearly translucent cellar spider whose irretrievable webbing had accumulated dust, and how I lifted the spider as I'd seen wading worshippers dredge water from the basin of a river, and how the spider didn't bother even to nip or scramble until I set him free with great dignity in the jade plant's branches to eat. 4. All I know of devotion, being a man, I meant to love better, as he unlatched his bicycle from the chain link to join for the last time the northbound traffic, the stars being disproportionate and few, marking his transportation through dim clusters of failures. 5. Because the earth travels by a calculable series of truths that seem to have fallen simply, clumsily, into place. 6. Forgive me if the self is best when falling out of love with the self. This poem is called Love Poem So Tall It Ends in Heaven. And I suppose the only thing that you that might be useful to know, to be kind of oriented at the beginning, is that I believe in certain states, in the case of suicides, coroners will attach to the bodies of the dead the implements that they used. So on that incredibly sad note, love poem so tall it ends in heaven. A man I loved kept a folded square of masking tape in his pocket. He did this only for a year. His masking tape was bright, orange, and fraying. As evidence, coroners had used it to attach to his father's calf the rope his father'd used. This man planted the tape in our yard when the year was done, and from it grew 13 beams. From these beams, rafters grew, ropes uncurled from these rafters, and fathers hanged from the ropes. Over the rafters, a roof blossomed like a shield, and against it a ladder leaned. The ladder was so tall, the man I love said it must have ended in heaven, and down from the ladder an angel scurried while we slept. In its mouth it carried torn strips of tape. The angel pressed this tape on the calves of the man I loved like bandages. Each morning I removed the tape. I was careful not to wake him. Each morning he'd walk through the garden of swaying fathers. He'd kneel beside our rosemary bush. He'd rub its leaves in his hands. He'd ball his hands in his hair to scent it. He wanted just to keep his earthliness with him. In hell, this is the only prerequisite. I was, of course. God once made me a raft of cedars, rode with me one night past the clean, barbed reef until his back, from some old outrage, gave out. Beside the raft, planked and dizzied in a snaggle of moonlight, pinkened the sea, which otherwise seemed without form. God grew frightened, and as I retreated us to our low island, said to me, "Stay quiet and be mine." There, with the simple trees, I was, of course, always quiet. I was already his. But God felt stranded, and he commanded I make the raft into fire. He sat breaking cedar planks in his hands while I built the fire tall, taller than a man. When my God stepped into it, he paused, reconsidering me, and then steadied himself, as if boarding a small boat. He said to me, "You know I loved you, but love, I thought, was wooden, simple. Whatever he wanted, that's what I was." This one is called Stray, and it is a poem in two short parts. So, Stray. One, it seems mostly unfashionable for the living to talk for long about death, as if their meanwhile invincibility were a shameful type of privilege. This is the stupid sort of thinking I made, wrapped in a dissolving family quilt, having badly climbed a lesser sea stack this morning on the coast, and only because I was bored with the morning, which had consisted otherwise of luxuriating in the living room by dancing to pop radio I didn't particularly like, later eating a smear of questionable peanut butter on toast. Also, vacations shouldn't have mornings, and they shouldn't have family blankets. But from my skinny sea stack, I felt at last a little mighty, admiring what of the landscape in a torn fog I could see, counting miniature waves struggle landward, offshore roilings like unaccountable self-losses and gains, white caps, snowy logic, seeming little more than the sea fleeing the sea, and then the sea giving the sea back to itself. Dying, I hope, is a little like that. Two, like cradling a stray you never had a name for. Its nipples obtruded, both your necks bent in adoration or yielding. The body itself, fractional and gadgeted, snared like spiral cases and shafts, sinews exact, obedience, the ball bearings of it all. As if saying yes to it. Sure, little life, little living, yes, but, and, little gift I never asked for, I'll one day set you out on the lawn. Thank you. Something trendy is to be like, two poem warning, there are two poems left. I have two poems left. The first one is called Colloquy, which is a kind of ceremonial dialogue. Religiously, it has to do with kind of whenever there's disagreement in terms of either scripture or any other form of doctrine or practice, sometimes parishes will get together and have some form of dialogue to discuss what needs to be done. Sometimes religiously a colloquy is also between a speaker and their God. All things bear but pine, and pine-scaling creeper, having dashed open in February fists of rolled leaves to a light so plentiful it's worthless. The sun knows to regain a little worth by disappearance, and you emerge from your ridiculous apartment to hike to the gas station down to the highway. Down the highway. You shouldn't, of course. Considering your recent head cold, considering also you're going for a case of beer, and of course the wind and drizzle tonight will profit you nothing. You haven't believed in good men in months, though even the fists of creeper remaking the landscape seem to you like brothers or a race between brothers. An anniversary, 1997, February, and across Hartwell, a college student walked the train tracks on a timber truss spanning a narrow in the lake. The story itself is simple. Enough booze, and no one hears a train. The student turned back and was, it seemed, touched on the arm. A word came to him, and he pulled apart like a wishbone. 3 days after this, it was still February 1997, you were standing in an alfalfa field scanning what you were to shoot. The neighbors emptied Schlitz cans, a precise row of silver and white he'd set out on a rotted hay bale. He leaned his rifle, forestock perched in weeds, against the ledge of a shallow ditch, and you stood up, because you were small, into the rifle, as he leaned against your back a bit. He pressed your shoulder into the rifle, and you pointed it at a can and pulled. Good, he kept saying, and he set his shoulder into yours. He took your hands to the trigger and had you pull again with him, rifle sound crackling against blank trees and returning to you. Good, he said, and he fired again, and you took each dig of the rifle into the giving shoulder, and because you wanted to believe this was good, you kept from yelling against this man who wanted to gather you, to remake you into what may have been worth a man. Onto the highway, The gas station lets fall narrow strafings of fluorescent light by which small cars are touched as they clip past. And you might ask that you receive a part in the dialogue between light and bodies passing through it, between the voice that begins in the throat and the voice a mouth abandons. The rain is light and good, and the wind tonight is bitter. Even if you feel it come gently against you, as if in this space the wind could come close to holding you, you'll say the wind itself is bitter. Thank you. Thanks for being so wonderful, y'all. I have just the one poem left. It's called Love Poem. Imagine a day alone and call it love. Let it mean all things are equal. Let it mean you have eaten, you are filled by an assortment of quick sale meats. Use the word delicious. For yourself, use the word collected, complete. Let it mean all things revolve around a wet living stone. Call it heart. Let it mean the earth moves with you, loop after loop. Never mind what you are known for or last night's dinner of cheese bread. What is sadness? Think sadness was a friend across the table. Never mind the man she named for you over dinner on Friday. What was his name? Anthony? Never mind Anthony. Anthony is blonde and blue-eyed and a waiter, and it said quite funny. Think Anthony is not a day alone, though. Not love. Let this break your heart. But don't say break your heart here or anywhere. Nobody wants to see it, wild and out. In this poem, ask, what heart? Let it be the wet living stone. Revolve around it this way, alone and alive. Remember, you are equal to anything equal to the earth. Say, little heart, for all your murmuring, I imagine you're textured like a persimmon. Say, little heart, if you are at all like a persimmon, I'll seal you in a jar of lime water to rid you of your unbearable flavor. Say, little heart, which of your ventricles is your favorite, your hardest worker? Drop your little heart in a mason jar and set it aside for the day. You will be truly in love then, won't you? You will be complete. This poem won't mind what you are known for or what you have brought with you. Nobody will love you like this poem does. Let this poem fill you. Let it wash your hair. It will use egg whites and honey. Maybe you'd like something different. Tell this poem what you want. Anything, the earth. Say, little heart, let me thumb you through until all your stones are turned and all your meats sold. Say, little heart, let there be a primacy in you. Let there be a primacy in you a poem can get to. Thank you very much.